Well, there's certainly human activity has contributed to climate change. That's been a finding of the International Panel on Climate Change for many, many years, for decades actually, and they have reiterated that finding with increasing confidence levels in virtually all of their reports.
And you're in agreement with that? That it's, I mean, is my understanding of the IPCC consensus statement is that it's a very high degree of certainty. It's in the 90% range.
That's correct. And the technical data on which that conclusion is based seems sound. We're not talking about opinions. We're talking about data that correlates very strongly with what we know about the production of fossil fuels, CO2 from fossil fuels, and other activities which tend to contribute to greenhouse gases.
So just to be clear, you're in agreement with the IPCC's conclusions across the board, or are there areas where you differ?
Well, the IPCC document that most people cite is a so-called summary report, and it's based on a much larger technical report. And we believe that the technical report does accurately represent the science here. And in my office, we try to stick to the science, and we agree that science, by and large, has been done properly, and that the conclusions that are summarized in the summary report are pretty accurate representation of what's happening. You have to remember that the climate is a very complex phenomenon, and there's been a lot of oversimplification of it, say, well, it's going to get hotter or drier or whatever, the various kinds of effects and phenomena that people point to. But overall, we're gradually obtaining a better and better understanding of all the different pieces of the climate system. So we know that understanding is improving. We know there are certain conclusions like the so-called anthropogenic impact on climate change. There's little question of that anymore. And that is our policy basis. That's the best summary of science that there is. There isn't any more complete or comprehensive effort.
What does this mean in terms of how serious a problem the administration views global warming to be? How serious a threat is this?
Well, the question of seriousness and judgments about how much of a problem and exactly what parts of the impacts of climate change are problems and not they're not actually scientific questions, because you have to put a value you have to put a value on certain activities and impacts. It's not easy to put a value on the annually averaged, globally averaged temperature of the surface of the Earth. That's not a very meaningful number. What we know is that that's going up. We also know that the ice is melting in the Arctic region, for example, and glaciers are melting all over the world. Putting a value on that is not simple. It's very, very difficult. And I am not in a position to put a value on it myself. There are lots of organizations that are working to understand what the best way of thinking about these impacts is. So all I can say is that they're happening. They're making changes. Some of those changes are likely to be negative for people that have to accommodate to them. And some are certainly positive, longer growing seasons and different patterns that favor one region over another. So there will be some dislocations of agriculture and accommodations to a changing pattern of species and rainfall and other things. But we're not making judgments about those individual impacts. What we are doing is saying that all of these impacts, however you want to value them, are being driven by the CO2 content of the emissions from our energy economy. And we know that we're going to have to make changes in the technology that we use to generate and use energy. So the rational thing to do, and this is something that we've recognized for a long time, is to invest in changing those technologies and develop alternative fuels, nuclear power to replace coal plants, doing something to extract the CO2 from the effluent of coal plants and make more clean coal not only in terms of particulate matter and other noxious or toxic emissions, but also in CO2, which is not directly toxic, but it leads to, it contributes to global warming. So we know that we're going to have to reduce the amount and eventually stop the amount of CO2 from fossil fuel that we're putting in the air. And that's going to require a great effort internationally great effort on everyone's part, which is why the president is taking it seriously and drawing together the major economies to meet to discuss how to begin to approach the problem.
In earlier statements, you indicated you thought if we continue along our current path, the planet may become unlivable, I think was your phrase. That sounds like a pretty serious threat.
Yes, I actually regret using the word unlivable because it lends itself to an exaggeration that has all too often accompanied discussions of climate change. I don't want to be so dramatic, but the fact is that CO2 accumulates in the atmosphere. It stays there. It persists, and once it's up there, it does whatever it's going to do with contributing to global warming. So if you continue to put CO2 up there and it doesn't get reabsorbed by planting new trees and things like that, then it'll just continue to, there will continue to be more and more of it, and the temperature will go up and up. That's what the models tell us. Now, eventually could be centuries from now, okay? But if you let this accumulate for centuries, then there will be some kind of trouble. Obviously, vast accommodations will be necessary. But I'm not putting a timeline on that. And obviously, people are changing their behavior even as we speak, because there is widespread appreciation for the fact that that CO2 is a greenhouse gas and that it can contribute to global warming. But I want to emphasize that the word unlivable is I think it can be too easily interpreted to indicate that something is going to happen very soon, and that would be a mistake. We're not talking about something that's going to happen in the near future.
Well, you've hinted at this already, of course, with your discussion of the energy technology change that's going to be needed. But what do we need to do you think, to avoid the unlivable planet, regardless of how far down the line it might be?
Well, there are two keys, actually. One is energy technology, in producing electricity or in burning fossil fuels to power transportation. We really consume quite a lot of fossil fuel, and we're putting CO2 up into the atmosphere that hadn't been there before. So we need to think about how to do that, and there are obviously these different sectors, power generation, transportation, but there are other sectors as well that are substantial in all of the ways that we use energy in our homes and in our businesses and manufacturing. And improved efficiencies are important, and alternative sources of electricity, all like wind or solar, all of which can be enhanced by improved battery technologies, electrical storage technology, for example. So there's a very broad spectrum of technologies that can be exploited to reduce our CO2 footprint on the planet. And I believe that they will all be captured in future policies around the world. And, of course, the idea of the president's initiative that he announced at the recent G8 meeting is to begin to work with the major economies of the world to identify a path forward that they can agree on so that they can continue to improve their standard of living without at the same time having a huge impact on the planet, on the environment. And in order to do that, there will have to be sharing of technology. There will have to be sort of individual paths for each country, because each country has different options for managing its energy and its environmental footprint. I didn't mention deforestation. That's a pretty serious problem. So the management of the world's forested regions, which are important sinks for CO2, will be an aspect of climate change strategy.
How should we use the science to set a target for the kind of emissions reductions we need to achieve? And what is a good target for the kind of global temperature increase that can be tolerated or should be avoided?
Well, I'm not a fan of targets. Targets tend to be somewhat arbitrary, and I haven't seen a good scientific basis for many of the numbers that have been thrown about for thresholds or things that you shouldn't exceed. I haven't seen the science for that, and I'm very uneasy when we talk about targets because it's frightening to those economies that are still growing and are likely to be producing more CO2 in the future. They don't want to feel that they're being deprived of the opportunity to improve themselves. So I believe that when it comes to goals, there will be different goals for different countries, and there will be different mechanisms that we'll have to experiment with to try to put into place, so that the whole world can work, all the nations can work together to address this problem. And I think the idea of having an overall target that's sort of a hard number to work toward is somewhat counterproductive at this phase. You've got to find out where the different countries are, what they're able to do, what their aspirations are, and work toward individually tailored strategies for each country.
You know, it probably comes as a surprise to a lot of our listeners to hear that the top science advisor to the president is in agreement with mainstream scientific consensus on climate change. There's a perception out there that the White House is rather out of step with the consensus on science.
Yeah, first of all, I want to hark back to that 2001 speech that the president made. Everyone should read the president's speech, 2001. It's been characterized incorrectly, I think, in the media. But there's no question that the president himself has embraced the scientific, I'd say the appropriate scientific findings regarding climate change almost from the beginning of the administration. And he says the Earth is warming. The national academies say that it's most likely caused by human actions, and we're producing too much CO2. We need to take responsibility for our emissions. And the media have tended to quote the modifiers in that speech, saying, you know, there is uncertainty, and we have to be careful and so forth, and be reasonable in our approach. But the conclusion is, and it's pretty obvious in the speech, that we have to do something about it.
On the introduction of technology, would not some sort of mandate be a lot more effective at encouraging the introduction of new technology into the marketplace?
Well, a mandate doesn't do any good if what you're proposing is more expensive than what people are doing now.
Putting a price on the carbon emissions, the theory goes, is what would spur the innovation and the investment in the new energy technologies.
Well, a lot of people talk about how to do that, and I'm not an economist. I'm not going to comment too much on that, except that there is disagreement about how best to do that, because what you're talking about doing is artificially raising the cost of a commodity that everybody uses all the time, namely energy. I mean, you're talking about increasing the prices of energy. And
is it artificial, or is it just recognizing the true cost that we're now ignoring, that we're putting off onto the atmosphere?
The word true cost is a little hard to pin down, because in order to know what the cost of what we're putting into the atmosphere is, you have to find a way of costing it. And we don't have a way. We don't have a credible way of putting a price tag on these. That's why this is one of the difficulties of the climate change picture. We do not have a credible basis for assessing the consequences of the current way that we consume energy, and that's a problem. So there's some arbitrariness about this. And you're asking a scientist now, and not an economist.
I'm curious. When you advise the president on climate change matters, do you try to press upon him that it is urgent and requires urgent action?
We try to tell. My job is to tell him what the science is saying, and the science includes observations of glacier melting, some very dramatic events in Greenland and Antarctic ice, and make sure that he's aware of those things and the warming trend and how much CO2 is being put up there and what its effect is. And he understands it. He has had many briefings, long before I came to Washington. He was briefed by experts and as well as the entire cabinet. So the policies are being made in a context of a much higher level of understanding of the science than I think most people are aware. This is not a topic that is foreign to the White House or to the cabinet. There's a pretty high degree of awareness of the science of these things, and that's why I can speak confidently that the president has certainly believed that there's important actions that need to be taken with respect to climate change right from the beginning.
And in your opinion, do you think that the White House policies are they up to the job given the threat that climate change poses?
I think the U.S. policies on this have been sounder than other policies. People have been hung up on this issue of whether it's happening or not, or whether there should be caps, or what the targets should be. And the U.S. has just gone ahead and invested in these technologies. And I feel more comfortable about actions that the U.S. has taken than I do about much of the rest of the world, because we are investing in new energy technologies, which is what is necessary. That is the big thing that we need to do. We need to have the technologies available. I mean, even if you put a big price on carbon, then it gives people an option. They either pay more and contribute less to other parts of the economy, or they find ways of continuing to improve the economy through new technologies. And so you can't just stop the economy. You have to have a place for it to go. You have to have a place. You have to have the technology to continue to develop the economy while you are reducing your CO2 emissions. That is a technology problem, and we will not solve the climate change issues. We will not resolve these issues without introducing massive new technologies, I sincerely believe.